You are now tuned in to My Skin Is My Sand on Blog Talk Radio. From goons to gods, we welcome everyone. We only have one rule. And that's be respectful. You are now tuned in to My Skin Is My Sand on Blog Talk Radio. Goons to gods, we welcome everyone. We only have one rule. And that's be respectful.
Holler at us next week, man.
No doubt, no doubt, man. And definitely shout out to the family, liberationmindedmedia.net. That is Black Eyes Stand, Do the Knowledge Radio, The Rundown with Renee, and My Skin Is My Sin. Oh, and don't forget to share the show, man. If you check it out today, or if you check it out next week, or if you check it out in 1,000 years, and if you are that motherfucker that digs us up in 1,000 years, you are the most phenomenal individual to ever walk the galaxy for digging up this greatness and still share our shit, man. Shout out to you. Don't forget to check out the websites, mrochelle.com, designsbymonet.com, and myskinismysin.net.
Okay, we got the queen in the queue as well. And if I think we got Queen Natasha Harrison. And let me get the plug on here. And I don't know if I got you muted, Queen. Give me 1 second.
I'm muted.
Oh, okay. How you doing, Queen?
I'm good. How's everyone doing?
Doing good. My name is Jobs, and welcome to Intellectually Petty Radio.
Yo.
How's life?
It's good. So I literally just finished a deposition that I was appearing by phone for like 2 seconds ago. So I have to like recalibrate my brain, I guess.
Well, I appreciate that. What exactly is a deposition?
A deposition is, it's similar to trial testimony. So often what you see on TV is the person in court and the lawyer's asking questions, one side saying objection and stuff like that. The same type of situation is set up in a conference room prior to trial, so that the other side can kind of figure out what's going on with the case. It's a fact-finding opportunity for people that would be potential witnesses, whether they're expert witnesses or fact witnesses. The first time that you find out what this person is going to testify to is not in the courtroom. You see what I'm saying? So there was a video floating around of Lil Wayne, and he was in a room and the guy was asking questions, and I think he kept pleading the fifth to everything, and the attorney got kind of mad. And there's another one of Dame Dash, I think.
So I've seen that one.
Those are depositions.
Dame Dash was classic though.
Yeah, so I knew you would have thought one of those at least. Yeah, so he that was a deposition. So it's Dame Dash's attorney was in the room there to make sure that the questions are proper, and other side of whatever that litigation was that he was dealing with was asking questions. And then there's a court reporter that transcribes everything, and the court reporter also swears the witness in. So it's under oath, and it can be used for perjury. So if they get into court and they say something different, then that attorney is going to say, do you recall giving your deposition on such and such day, such and such location? He's going to say yes, and they're going to say, okay, on that day we asked you da 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 da, and you said da 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 da. So then that goes to their credibility.
Damn, you can't just forget.
I mean, it depends on the situation. So if it was something where, let me think of something that just happened. Okay, so this deposition was of a doctor, and there's something, it's from a treatment date of, I think it was March 28th of 2013. So that's 7 years ago and some change. So right. No one's gonna remember. So of course she's not able to, she doesn't have any independent recollection of the patient that we're talking about. Now, if she gets into court and, you know, she's asked that question, she says, yeah, I remember her, I have independent recollection. And the other side says, on such and such day, you said during your deposition that you don't recall or you don't have any independent recollection. She, of course, can say, yeah, but now that I see her right now, I do remember. Or between my deposition and today, something refreshed my recollection. So you can have an explanation for not forgetting. But if you answer yes to something and then you're changing your answer to no in court, that's different. So there's going to be a lot of follow-ups as to, well, why is your answer different? Are you lying then? Are you lying now, or are you lying then, type of thing?
Okay. And I'm sorry, I didn't realize that I still had the speaker on, so it may have like been like an echo. And if it was, my bad.
No, it wasn't for me, but it's fine.
Okay. And we got another Natasha actually in the comments. She said it's nice to meet a fellow Natasha.
Hi, Natasha.
So you've been practicing what, like 7 years?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And personal injury?
Well, I mainly do toxic tort litigation, but I do, personal injury. So anything from, car accidents, like Lyft, Uber, up to like going against like major corporations, like the tobacco companies, BP oil. The case I was just doing is against BP oil. So they're very different and I like doing both. So I like, helping and working on cases of clients that I can see the beginning and end really quickly. So like a car accident, we can wrap that up in 6 months or maybe even less sometimes. The toxic tort cases take years. And they're obviously it's complex tort litigation, so it's a lot more complex than negotiating a deal with an insurance company following an accident.
And do you have a preference?
I like doing both. I like to mix it up. Majority of civil claims don't go to trial, right? So I think the number is, I think it's 90 something, but the number keeps rising. 90 something percent of civil claims. So any case where you're suing someone for money, 90 something percent of them never make it to trial. So I like the fact that I'm guaranteed to continually be in court because these types of cases, the complex tort and the mass tort litigation, those cases, for the most part, go to trial. A car accident case, most times it's not. I mean, sometimes you do have to litigate it, but it's rather rare.
What about toxic baby mothers?
Oh my goodness.
That's family law. I don't do family law.
Yeah, my apologies. How you doing? I'm wrong. She totally ignored you, bro.
She on the phone right now, man. She's completely ignoring you.
Yeah, I don't believe you.
I'm telling you the truth, man.
I don't believe you. I already smell hate.
Queen, you were on the telephone right there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right, and I'm trying to tell him she's ignoring you, bro. She can't hear you.
Oh yeah, I had to silence really quick. So that was actually the attorney. Something came up in the depot that we need to discuss. So I just bought myself 30 minutes because I told him I was already supposed to be on something else. So I just bought myself 30 minutes and then asked him back.
Okay. All right. So legally, in the Breonna Taylor case, totally switching lanes, what should we be doing? What should our Black attorneys be doing to get them arrested? Is there anything that can be done?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people think, I don't want to say a lot of people, but some people will say to me, well, I don't think the phone calls and the emails do anything. They absolutely do. It's sad that we have to throw like temper tantrums to get justice. But the bottom line is that's what has to happen in a lot of instances, because they feel like if we don't care, then they don't have to care. So we need to remind them that we're not going to stop caring about Breonna Taylor. And we need to apply pressure. So it's frustrating that we're not getting the same results in Breonna Taylor as we are in the publicized cases that are around the same time frame, George Floyd, Ahmaud Arbery. They're obviously getting more movement, but we have to remember that it's about the end game, right? The end game is conviction. So we want conviction and we want changes to legislation. So you paying attention to what's going on, what movement is not being made, being vocal about that, writing emails, sending letters, making phone calls. Yeah, it does go to voicemail, but blow them up, like make those phone calls. For people that are local, then you can get out there and protest. I'm headed back to Kentucky this month, and Until Freedom is occupying the state or the city for the entire month of August. These are the types of things that have to happen. So I don't like to, I can give suggestions as to what people can do, but I think that everyone needs to figure out where their strengths are. What are your talents? Where can you make the most impact? Okay, so if you are a good writer, then reach out to some local attorneys that are in Louisville and say, hey, are you guys working on any proposed bills or legislation? Can I help? law students can get involved, and that'd be a great experience for them that they can use in their future, but it also helps the cause. So there's something that everybody can do, and the way you figure that out, if you don't know for yourself, is to just reach out to somebody and say, hey, what can I do? Sometimes it is just donating money, because these things have to move. So right now, in Louisville, they're having meetings, and Until Freedom is essentially teaching folks there how they can make an impact, how they can make a difference. So, you know, there are so many people that have their hands in that. They need facilities to conduct meetings and hold people up, or, you know, not house people, but, you know.
I get what you're saying.
Facilities, yeah. And they need food to feed them. So I feel like if more people would just, you can literally go on Instagram and reach anyone that you want to reach, send a message and say, hey, I am pissed off too, and I want to know how I can help. And again, some people are not the type to be on the front line, but they'll sign a check. And I don't want to discourage the people on the front line from being on the front line, because that's powerful. And I also don't want to discourage the people that are signing checks, because that's powerful too. You can't do both. Right.
The revolution ain't free.
It's not. It's not.
And people be acting like, oh, well, you know, so he's so and so, he should do it for the people. Like, he got to eat too.
Yeah.
It's a lot of time given. It's a lot of time put in that.
And what people miss is it's a lot of energy too. Okay. Fact. So I literally have not stopped moving. I was just talking to a friend earlier today via text, and they were saying, like, I can't wait to get back out. And I'm like, I can't wait to just take just a 3-hour nap in the middle of a Saturday and not have to jump up to go here, or go there. Like, I need rest. That's what I need. Which sometimes it does require like going on a vacation for me to get that rest. Then I can say I'm not in town. Sorry. But, so that, you know, that does work better for me, but it's not free. The revolution is not free. So what I want people to get away from is saying, oh, they're just doing it for money. Let that like go out of style. Are there some people who are in it for the wrong reasons? Absolutely. But don't let that be a general statement that you just make, because there are good people out there doing really good things, and we should find ways to support them.
So when they say that, like, you know, you see one of our brothers or sisters and got murdered by the police, and then they say they have an attorney representing the family, what exactly are they representing them for? Like, because I think some people think that they're representing them in court as far as the case is concerned, that what happened to their loved one. And I don't believe that's the case.
That's a loaded question. There's many layers to that, right? Mm-hmm. So any family that has suffered such a loss as this, I always suggest that they have multiple attorneys. Mm-hmm. Okay, you'll see that often. Sometimes that's because the attorney that gets involved says, I want to bring in other attorneys to assist me because it's going to be, you know, bigger or whatever, right. Whatever the reason is. Right. So that can be that choice, but I always advise the family to have multiple attorneys so that everyone can stay focused on what their role is. So is the attorney representing them in court? Mm-hmm. Yes, to a certain extent. So criminal court and civil court is the easiest way to divide it, right? But you also have family court, you have drug court, you have, you know, mental health court, you have little other courts in the mix, but essentially either we're talking about freedom or we're talking about money, right? So criminal, yeah, the family doesn't have an attorney that sits in for the prosecution and says, I'm gonna make sure that this is done. However, the state attorney prosecutes, or if it's federal court, you know, the district attorney, whatever it is, but the government acts as the person that the body, the entity, the person that brings the charges and has to prove that that person committed whatever charge. Now, right. This is when we get to court. So we're not there in Breonna Taylor, but the family's attorney is still present to advise and to protect the family's interests even through that process. Okay, so what does that mean? They're going to want to do press, but the state attorney they have their job to do, right? So their job is to advocate for the victims involved, but they're not thinking of specifically the family's interest per se.
Right.
The defense attorney, that is the attorney for the whomever is charged with committing whatever murder. Their job is to ensure that the state is doing what they're supposed to do and that their client gets a fair trial. More simply put, you know, they want to get their client acquitted. They are not thinking about the family. That's not their role. That's not their job. The family on high, you know, cases with a lot of press and a lot of publicity, there's going to be just everyone's going to come from every which way. CNN, you know, whatever news network is going to want to do interviews. There's going to be press conferences. There's going to be a lot of things surrounding them just being present in court. And they need someone that's going to protect their interests. Now, that's the criminal side. The civil side, the family will have at least one attorney that is focused on the civil case.
Okay.
And if it's a wrongful death and someone else is responsible for it, then there should be a civil lawsuit for it. The family should be compensated for that loss. Like, there's nothing wrong with that. And that's how our justice system is set up. So that doesn't happen until after the criminal case is done. So sometimes people will look and they'll be like, this lawyer's there and they're not even doing anything because everyone has a job and you have to wait your turn. So okay. While that attorney is not, you know, you can file a civil lawsuit, but it just doesn't always make sense to do it right then. It just depends on the facts in the case. But even when a lawsuit has not been filed for the civil aspects of the claim of the case, the attorney is still working on that case, building it, collecting the information as things develop in the criminal case. That's information that can be applied to the civil case as well. So they're still working and they're building their case and they're advocating for the family. So there's a lot of things that go on that the attorney is responsible for that you don't see, that doesn't quite make sense just looking at, you know, when you see them on TV making a statement. Does that make sense?
That does. I appreciate that too. Yeah, I feel a little bit smarter. You know, it does. Do you watch other attorneys? Do they have like films that, you know, that lawyers watch, like the game tapes?
Game tapes?
Yeah. Do they show
like drilling highlights?
But only in court.
Oh, game. I thought you said gang. G-A-N-G.
Oh no no.
Sure. I mean, stuff will be on YouTube. I remember when like I was a new attorney and I don't even know how many thousands of depositions I've done at this point, but starting off, you know, when you have to go to your first deposition, yeah, you want to see, you know, like, does another attorney have a video depo that you can watch, just to kind of get the feel for it. But bigger cases are publicized. Someone, you know, like Johnny Cochran, who his, you know, was very, very, very popular. Yeah. So his cases were always going to be filmed because everyone loved Johnny. So you could probably put together a highlight reel of his cases that someone probably has. But I don't think that, I think that would be very entertaining. So I've never heard of like someone doing it and putting it out to watch the way that people watch a game or a highlight reel of like Jordan. But I don't know. If no one has, you might be onto something. That might be.
I know. I'm just thinking about that. Like, damn, I should do that.
I have a hypothetical question for you.
Okay.
And I just want you to answer it to the best of your ability, what you comfortable with.
Okay.
So speaking on Breonna Taylor, let's say Breonna Taylor was Brittany Jurkowski. Right? Same scenario, but she's not a black woman.
Okay.
As an attorney, do you feel like there would be a higher level of accountability at this point dealing with the case?
Well, yeah. I mean, the reason why people are everywhere screaming Black Lives Matter and wanting it plastered everywhere is because the one thing we do know is that in our nation as a whole, Black lives don't matter. And Black women in these types of situations get even less, you know, I don't want to say concern. I don't think that people, it's not that people don't care. I just don't think that people are as pressed to advocate for justice for Black women. Part of it is because Black women, you know, we tend to just carry the weight and keep it pushing. But I think that now people are starting to speak up more, and that's one of the silver linings of this Breonna Taylor situation. Her murder has opened a lot of people's eyes to not just the injustices that surround Black people in the Black community, but Black women specifically. And that's why people are, you know, the WNBA from the very beginning, they were like, this is how we're doing it, you know, and they wanted everyone to say her name. And I think that this would have been different if it, you know, was a white girl named Brittany. Yeah, of course. Absolutely. Because that's what history has taught us, right? So I think that it means that the police would have been arrested by now? Depends on who was advocating for it. But I think that right now, some people put blue lives above all lives. So man, I don't know how, right. I can't really, you know, just what first pops into my head, I don't know that I can break down how I think that that scenario would have played out. But I definitely think that there would have been more media coverage of it, especially if she was an attractive white woman. And I think that there would have been a closer look at the laws that are in place, and it probably would have gained more traction beyond Louisville. I just think that it would have been different. I mean, we know that based upon what we've seen when Black girls go missing or kidnapped, mm-hmm. and versus what we see when, you know, a white girl is kidnapped or
absolutely.
Ain't shit changed, you know.
No, we're pushing to make changes. So that's why I want people to say, what can I do to help? How can I change this? I don't want everyone to continue with the mentality of like, this is just how it is. It's always going to be like that, because I don't believe that's true and I won't stand for that.
Have you seen NFAC?
What's that?
Not effing around coalition.
Oh, yeah. I never heard anyone say it. NFAC. That makes sense.
We got a chance to actually interview their founder.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, that was pretty dope. But I was wondering, what do you think of, like, is that the way of the future that we need to show up with guns?
Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've been on my page, but I'm an advocate for concealed weapon permit by all Black people. I just don't understand how you could be Black in America right now and feel safe without a firearm on your hip, in your bag, you know, somewhere within arm reach at all time. Do I think most people agree with me? No. But are more people agreeing with that? Yes. And I think that they're the wave of the future, or that's the direction that we're going? That's hard to say, but I do think that you can make stark contrast between the protest where white supremacists with, you know, open carry weapons, carrying automatic rifles and such, in, you know, front of whatever government building. And we saw how that played out. So right. That's been part of my response when people make just the color, you know, distinctions. Look how this white protest was, and look how this Black protest was, you know. And it's like, yeah, but they got big guns and y'all out here saying, please, you know, walk with us and please come support our Black Lives Matter movement. No, I do think we need to get away from please and stop all this begging, because this is not cute and I'm sick of it. Do I think that we should be everywhere carrying guns? Well, if I lived in an open carry state, I would carry them too, because they're carrying them. So if white supremacists make it clear that they don't like us just based upon the color of our skin, how do you feel safe amongst them? I don't get how you feel safe. So I do think that we need to take a more forceful approach to the things that we deserve. These are not wants. We're literally asking for basic human rights. Basics, civil rights. Like that blows my mind that you can say to people that this particular class of people, their lives matter. And then people say, well, but what? So we've tried to be nice. We've tried to, you know, be patient. And I think that a more forceful approach is definitely the wave. And just them carrying guns and being ready for whatever and not taking nobody's shit doesn't mean that, saying that we're going and we're going to start shooting up places, because that ain't us. Look at all mass shootings. That ain't us. Okay. So, you know, carrying around your rifle or whatever your, you know, gun is, your firearm is, and saying that don't try me because we ain't with that, is, it should be the move.
I'm with you on that one, Queen.
And they're not saying, so people will look at them and they'll be like, oh, they're trying to promote violence. Why? Like, what? I mean, because I haven't heard of, except for one incident where like a gun accidentally went off or something like that. You know, I haven't heard of them going into a place and, you know, trying to stir stuff up and getting aggressive and inciting a riot or, no. Who do we hear that from? from the police that are, you know, stirring stuff up, inciting riots and injuring people. So,
you know, and you know what you don't see is the police even coming close to them, let alone throwing tear gas or anything.
Yo, a dude, it was a dude in Pennsylvania, shot an AK-47, shot 7 rounds at the police in Pennsylvania. I don't know exactly what city it was, but I just read this article.
Oh, shot, and they blamed it on COVID depression.
Yep. Bruh, they arrested him.
Of course.
They arrested him peacefully. Yeah. He didn't die. He wasn't injured. Like, nothing.
I saw him too. Yeah, white guy, of course. But, and yo, man.
Well, yo, that's he was arrested and wasn't shot or killed. I already knew what race he was.
Right.
Would you defend him?
For what?
Like if you were, let's say you were a criminal attorney, defense attorney.
So for his criminal charge for, you know, attempted murder or whatever.
Yeah.
When I did more criminal defense, So like if, you know, I did primarily criminal defense and he came into my office, because I drew my line at someone accused of molestation or pedophilia or something like that. Mm. That's where I drew my line because I knew that I didn't want to and almost felt like I couldn't, you know, cross-examine a child that is saying that this person did something, this grown-up did something inappropriate to me, and then I'm just focused on, you know, making sure that my client has a safe, a fair trial and, you know, basically trying to get an acquittal, not guilty verdict. I knew that I couldn't do that. Now, people think burglars, murderers, you know, that how can you do that? And it's like, well, first of all, he's not guilty until he is proven innocent, right? So in this case, you know, there's video, there should be no question of it. But I mean, shoot, like we just talked about, the revolution ain't free. So if he want to give me his money to go and negotiate a plea deal or whatever, because it's crazy of him to, like, why are you gonna go through a trial? And there's video of you doing it. I'm sure he probably admitted at some point because he's, I don't know, whatever. So if I need to collect a check and represent him, I would have done that earlier. Now I'm a little more choosy with regard to the cases that I take overall, but especially criminal defense, right? So I like to take cases that I feel passionate about because it allows for me to go harder. You know, I will collect a check for everything that I work on, but I like to have some level of passion involved there. And that type of person, I can't be passionate. I don't want you on the street, you know what I'm saying? But at the same time, like our criminal justice system is raggedy. So, you know, everyone deserves a good lawyer to represent them no matter what aspect, you know, what side you're on.
Some motherfuckers don't. I'm sorry. I can't agree with that. Some people just need to go to fucking jail.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't support going to jail, period. I think the prison system is a hot mess.
Really?
So
like, how would you punish a murderer?
I'm not going to say that on here, but okay. I think there are alternative ways of punishment that you need to decide what is your goal with prison. Right. So you think just sitting a child in timeout and not saying anything to them about your expectations for how you want them to handle the situation better in the future. And then if your child keeps on doing the same thing over and over again, you are having that conversation and you're not trying to explore further to figure out like, why is my child doing, like, is there something else going on? Like, maybe I need to explore this. Your goal with a child and disciplining them should be to correct a behavior so that they can be better and learn lessons, right? So prison to me is, I just think, what's the point? Like, it's not rehabilitative. Like, you know, we in studying criminal justice, we studied the, you know, the systems and the various ways of how, you know, prison can accomplish, you know, like, are you trying to rehabilitate? Are you trying to reform? Is it just for punishment? And I think just for punishment is counterproductive because you got people in there that, I'm only talking about the people that were rightfully convicted of a crime and their sentence. You know, I think the sentences are unfair for us.
True.
I can't support the system. And I think that there's nothing it's designed to keep them essentially coming back. I don't know the percentage, but I'm sure someone has studied this, and I think a large percentage of people in prison return, not because of who they are, but because of the fact that they become institutionalized while they're in there and they can't get a job when they come out. No opportunities for them to create some new normal for them and then adjust to the way the world is now that they're out after doing however much time. And it's just created for them to fail. And I don't like that. So the decision needs to be made, like, is this person, you know, should they be on death row? Okay, that's different. That's, you need to be punished and do your time, and then you're going to be sentenced to death. But if this is someone who's eventually going to be let back out into society, just sitting in a small room and giving them, you know, like little bits of recreational resources, whatever, what are you doing?
Yeah.
So, I mean, the prison system is to benefit. It's a corporation at this point. So,
Because you used to get a degree, you can come back out to society and actually function higher than you were prior to going to prison.
Yeah, and
that makes sense.
It's we know who it was designed to remove the rights for, take away freedom from. I mean, prison is just a new form of slavery at this point.
Yeah.
And, I just think it's absurd that it's for profit. So many of them are, and they're making money off of it. They have quotas. I mean, I could go on and on and on with all the issues that I have with the prison. And then, I mean, the school to prison pipeline, that's a thing. Like, and people need to be aware of it, and we need to figure out how to fix it. So one of the sources of fixing that is defunding the police and reallocating those funds to communities, which will end up reallocating them to education as well, so that we could fix this.
I'm with that 1,000%. Like, I don't get like how people is like, no, don't defund the police. Okay, it's the police departments with tanks, like real ass tanks. You don't need a fucking tank. Please explain to me why half the police force needs a Ford Explorer. You don't need a Ford Explorer. Them old ass cars that you was driving in the '90s. Look, my shit's from 2012. Why can't your shit be from 2012? I don't get it. You know. They don't need, you know, I understand certain weaponry, certain, you know, but they take that shit way too far. You don't need all that. And you can put that into school programs or, you know, job programs. Like, it used to be, you didn't have to be a doctor or a lawyer to be successful in this country. You can work on the line at Chrysler and not only raise a good family, y'all go on vacation, y'all have a nice house. And it didn't matter, you know, black folks too. Like, I'm from Detroit. That shit happened. But now, you know, it's all set up for people to be right to go to prison.
Yeah, because it's money is number one. Certain humans' lives are number two, but money is definitely the number one focus. And that should be clear to everybody after the way this whole pandemic has played out thus far. Man. So all of these, everyone's, you know, happy to receive $1,200. But did you read to see how much money went to bail out these major corporations that really didn't even need it? And some of them, like, we can live without y'all. Like, if you can't make it, then maybe your stuff wasn't together. But you want to be like, oh, well, and put it back on the person who got laid off from their job, or even the people that had to quit their job because they're an essential worker and now their kids are out of school. They don't have anyone to help. Maybe the person who typically babysat for their children passed away from COVID. Like, people are in effed up situations and nobody cares. And it makes me very, very sad that all they care about is money, that the rich keep getting richer. We have people at the top that are climbing towards trillionaire status. And we literally have people that are just begging for, you know, please don't evict me and my kids. So it's a sad, sad situation. But it's a situation that we have to fix. So we need to figure out ways to join our talents and, you know, come together and get it together.
Yeah, the homeless population probably next year is probably going to double. Like, they're going to evict so many people. They keep telling them they don't have to pay rent and they don't have the money to pay rent. But come next year, they're going to hit them with a $10,000 bill.
Yep. at least, because you give $1,200. I mean, I don't know how much it costs to live in other places, but here in Florida, there's not many places that you can live and your rent is less than $1,000 a month. So I just don't know what that $1,200 was supposed to do for people that have literally been out of work for months now. So if they're talking about another $1,200, like, okay, but we're looking at like next year before this ish goes back to normal. So, I mean, what are we really doing for people? Like, are we?
Yeah, we hope.
Oh no! So I just hope and pray that, you know, with the schools, that they can have a little bit more decency and try to protect these kids and these teachers. You know, some jurisdictions are like, screw you, President. Like, we're not making these kids go back to school. We're doing 100% virtual. But that's foul. Like, you're going to threaten taking away funding.
Exactly.
Because you want to keep their kids, the students and the teachers safe. I found out from a podcast that I did on this issue last week that some jurisdictions are requiring the teachers to sign death waivers. I'm like, I just can't even make it up at this point. Like, are you seriously going to put someone in a situation where they either have to quit their job, their career, and or sign a death waiver saying that, you know, whatever they're waiving? I told them, send me that. Let me see that. Let me go ahead and find these loopholes now. So if you say no and they fire you, then we can go ahead and get it.
But, like, have you seen, like, even the schools that's open already, like in Georgia, like, they're having, like, massive outbreaks already.
Yeah. So one of the questions I asked is to one of the teachers that was a guest on the podcast is, because he basically said that they gave them, you know, books and it had, like, flow charts. And it said, like, if this happens and this is what we do in response, if that happens, then da, da, da. So, you know, I was like, okay, so what does the flow chart say when, not if, when there's an outbreak within the school? What happens then? Then everyone's forced to go to virtual now? Like, what's cool? Because they're saying that they're going to take everyone's temperature, but we all know at this point that people can literally be asymptomatic. So I don't understand what you think you're doing by just taking the temperature. There's no way to test someone for that's asymptomatic unless you are literally giving them a COVID test every single day.
Wow.
I mean, what are y'all going to do?
And then the fucked up part about it is the school board to have a Zoom meeting to discuss the shit, but wants you to put your kids in the classroom.
There you go. So my hometown, which is smaller, I found out that only one member of the, you know, the board said that voted for virtual. Everyone else said for them to go to school. And I'm like, well, most of them probably don't have kids. And I was like, but y'all need to keep that in mind when it's time to vote. Like,
And your old ass is in that is in the worst category. Like, let's be honest. Most of the people on these councils, these board school board members, be older people. So when these kids, if they have an outbreak, they're gonna go home and then quarantine with their parents. Not their parents sick.
Yeah. So I first of all, I think the schools should have been split. Like, all kids go every day because everyone needs to be considered. Right. So it's not just about the people in charge. It's not just about the money. You need to think about the teachers and you need to think about every type of teacher. So you need to think about the teacher that's young and, you know, early 20s. And you need to think about the teacher who this is their last year before they're up for retirement. They're elderly, but if they quit now, they miss out on a lot of benefits. You need to think about the parents and you need to think about the parent who is a single parent who has to go to work, who has three children, all varying ages, and doesn't have anyone to help, you know, teach their kid or monitor their kid while the teacher is teaching them virtually. You need to teach about, think about the students. You need to think about every type of student. You need to think about the five-year-old in kindergarten. But you need to think about the five-year-old that is healthy and the five-year-old that has asthma. You also need to think about the senior in high school that is missing out on their, you know, senior year and all the things that come along with it, who might want to go to school just because it's their senior year, but it might not be in their best interest. You need to think about the students that go home to elderly grandparents. You need to inform people that, hey, this is what you need to consider. It's not just about want. If you have elderly grandparents at home, you may want to opt for virtual.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? Like, they need to communicate these people so that people can make informed decisions and parents can sit down with their kids and be like, hey, what do you want? This is what I think. And they can have that discussion and then make a decision. But if they wanted to go back, then everybody should do a 5-day week and it should be split half through, like half of the students go in the mornings and the other half goes in the evenings, but then there needs to be after and before care. So if you go in the afternoon, you know, part of the days, then you need to go to wherever they're at, there's aftercare, and that's before care for them. And that's where you start your day. So everybody is gone for the same amount of time from 7 a.m. to, I don't care if it's 6 p.m., because then that allows for parents to go to work and do their work. And then, so you can take that $500,000, whatever dollars that y'all get in, and spend it on facilities for them to have aftercare, or send everybody, you know, make everybody do virtual and then have smaller pods set up for kids who their parents cannot teach them, essential workers. You know, there are just so many options here, but I just think that none of them really thought about everyone who's involved here, and that frustrates me.
No, they only think about old white dudes. Like, let's be honest, you know, and then white women, and then we at the bottom, you know, unfortunately.
How do you feel about, how do you feel about teachers going into teaching independently on their own?
So I was a teacher before I went to law school for a few years, and a couple of years. And I probably would have set something like that up, because I don't know. I don't know if they could have convinced me that they're going to protect me enough for me to go back to school. So I probably would have figured out some way to do an independent type deal and rented out a space, just charge, you know, as minimal as amount of money as I could to be able to accomplish this, and then like teach the kids the best I can, just have them all opt for homeschool, because I think you get like a stipend, you get something for that. So then if y'all want to go to homeschool, then however many people I can fit in whatever space that I have to where we're all like socially distanced, then I'm going to do that, because kids need one-on-one support. And they can offer that if everyone's going virtual. But if it's split where some kids are going virtual, some kids are going in person, some kids are homeschooling, like I just don't know. This whole thing has been like nobody really knows, and we're just all kind of just trying to see how it all plays out.
And then the president is just a fuck up.
Yo, you heard him say that kids are immune?
Okay, because we had a 9-year-old that had no pre-existing conditions and she just died. Two teenagers just died. 11-year-old died, all from coronavirus. So,
yo, the crazy part is, yo, his Axios interview, it looked like an SNL skit. Like, it really looked like something you would see on Saturday Night Live.
Dude's he's a fuck up. Like, he's a... We could go on for days talking about this goofball.
Yeah. Oh my God.
But back to Breonna Taylor. If you're pissed off like me and my homegirls are, then you need to follow Until Freedom. Like I said, that they're there for the entire month. You need to follow Breonna Taylor's family attorney, Lanita Baker, Diva Attorney on Instagram. She posts information, and those are the people that you can reach out to directly and say, hey, what can I do? Can reach out to me and I'll guide you as best as I can. I post information as well. It just is, it's frustrating where we are with this, okay? There's so many things wrong with what happened there. And I've been saying that I get that some people want to say these three officers' names so that, you know, they don't have the opportunity to be, you know, like underneath the radar or whatever. I'm not going to learn their names. I won't. The three murderers, murderer one, murderer two, and murderer three. The reason why they're in the forefront, because they're the ones that their bullets actually, you know, we're talking about who shot what and where. I it cannot stop there, because what brought them there was this jacked up no knock warrant. And people were involved and were dishonest with regard to attaining said warrant. So those are the people that have their dirty little hands in here, and we're not even worrying about them. So this case is huge. There's so many moving parts, but what I don't want to happen is that people think like, oh, I haven't heard anything in a while, so you think that nothing's going on. That's not true. There's so much going on with this case, and that's why I'm going back. I'm not letting up, and a lot of people aren't either. There are investigations outside of the state's investigation. So there are things that are, you know, in the works there, but those things take time. So we want to see something done now. Absolutely. We want those cops arrested, officially fired. And I want to see justice all around, which is person who lied and said that, you know, the postal worker indicated that she was receiving lots of packages. The judge that signed this BS warrant, and then if the judge says, well, I went off of this fact, and it was a lie, well, then that judge should make sure that that person doesn't put him in an awkward situation where,
right,
you know, his signature is on a BS warrant. So everybody should be mad. If I was involved with it some way and I knew that I was lied to, I'd be like, because this person making me look bad. So they got right. to go. So I just think that people need to be more fired up like that as far as the people that are directly involved. Everyone else, figure it out. Post on your social media. Make sure that people are still saying her name and still remembering her, either in your conversations or, again, posting on your social media. You need to reach out to everyone that has the power to make a difference in this case. So Daniel Cameron just got married last weekend. And that's when I was like, oh, nah, like, I got to come back. Mm. You know, and I didn't know that Untold Freedom was going back. But I hit up my friend who is Breonna Taylor family's attorney. And I was like, I need to come back. He got time to get married. And that's when I found that they'll be there for the entire month. So they're literally, with all the things going on, they're making this a priority and setting up shop to figure out what the hell we need to do.
Shout out to them. And thank you.
Yes.
And thank you to you too, Queen.
You're welcome. You're welcome. You know,
if don't nobody else tell you, we proud of you.
Oh, thanks. Just doing my that's best. For sure.
No doubt. And I know we can't keep you too long. I know you got to call old boy back. I don't want to... You know, that's money right there. You gotta handle that one. I'm not mad at that.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
It was a pleasure and an honor. You know, truly appreciate you. Our home is your home. Whenever you want to come back, we would love to have you. Definitely. Okay. And I'll send you a link, you know, once I kind of fix it up a little bit in the next couple of days and put it on YouTube officially.
Okay.
All right. And just so if anybody wants to get in contact with you one more time, let them know.
I'm the Lit Lawyer on IG, so the LIT Lawyer. That's probably the best means.
Yeah, the vacation pictures are dope too, by the way.
They're old.
Put that out there. Well, hey, you've been on a vacation. I went to the hospital. It was different.
The hospital for what?
Oh my God! It's a couple months ago. I had a heart attack.
Oh my gosh! I'm so glad that you're still here.
It helps. Yeah, me too. I appreciate it though.
I hope you also figured out the source and that you've made some changes to make sure that doesn't happen again.
I have not had a cigarette in 3 months, 2 days, 12 hours, 16 minutes, and 4 seconds.
Like, keep it up. So now tobacco litigation is all I did for like 5 years. So I will tell you this. So cigarettes with all the thousands of chemicals that were added to cigarettes to make the nicotine, which naturally occurs in tobacco, more addictive. So they intentionally did that, adding, you know, embalming fluid, rat poison. There's tons of nasty stuff in there, acetone. Okay. So that a cigarette freebases quicker than crack cocaine. So that's why people are so addicted to cigarettes. But after 3 months, that chemical, like, makeup, then balance, how everything triggers and makes you like feel like you have to get a cigarette or it's the end of the world, that's gone. So if you go back to smoking, it's a choice at this point.
I don't know if it's gone, because I've continued to have the same urge to smoke as I did the first day I quit.
A lot of it is based upon habit. So you just have to be careful and replace it with something else. So if you're the type of person that you could even back up straight or parallel park, right, if you ain't have a cigarette in your mouth, then figure out something else that you can put in your mouth. you just have to replace it. And then, it takes 21 days, they say, to form a habit. I don't believe that. I think it depends on the person. So you probably have been focused on just trying to fight the urge, right?
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Now you need to think about like a replacement if you're still having the desire to want to smoke. But it would absolutely be a choice. There's science out there that supports that. After 3 months, the withdrawal, basically, you're done. So it's a desire now. So keep that in mind. You can't
shout out to me.
But I would shout out
for you. Facts, though.
Someone just texted me and said that they wish that y'all would have read the comments or something. I don't know if people have questions.
I kind of got caught up in the conversation, so my apologies.
Well, if it's,
criminal prosecution is solely for punishment and they don't consider rehabilitation. Mm-hmm. I would agree with that.
Well, I do have to run though, so I just wanted to apologize to anyone that was, you know, doing the comments. I'm not on
myself too.
Okay, so I do apologize, but if they're, you know, if people have questions, they can definitely come and ask me, or, you know, if there's a lot going on there, if you want to take note and I can come back and answer them, I'll have to do that too.
And I truly appreciate you, Queen. And again, I do apologize. Hey, sometimes I get caught up in a good conversation. So.
Oh, yeah. So I just wanted to say to the people that were making comments or asking questions that, you know, my bad, because I didn't see them. But again, come ask me if you have a question. I do a series that's, you know, a few times a month. It kind of depends on what people are asking me to talk about. But it's called Lit Gloss. And I just try to, you know, add a little gloss to the things that people don't really want to talk about or don't really understand. And instead of, you know, making it super boring, like via Google, I just try to talk about it, make it more conversational. But I answer questions. Like I need to do one about how to handle like being pulled over, which is that you're being detained. So there are questions that you can ask to make sure that it's a lawful detention. And there are preferred ways, in my opinion, to handle getting pulled over. So those are the types of questions. Like people will say like, hey, what's punitive damages? Or, you know, why didn't they charge the people who killed Ahmaud Arbery with a hate crime? And, you know, so if I get those questions, then I'll just kind of do a video and address them. So long explanation, but that's why, you know, I just wanted to let people know y'all can come and ask me. Or like I said to you, if there's a lot of them, you can just take note of them and I'll come back. But gotta go. Well,
appreciate it, Queen, and you have a great day.
Thank you. Y'all take care. Stay safe.
You as well. Peace.
Bye.
That was pretty dope.
Yeah, that was fire, actually.
Yeah, that was pretty dope. And I'm not sure. Ryan Fraser was the only question. And I know Ryan Fraser. She's working, not ignoring. I'm just really just was fucking with my co-host at the time. I was. I do agree. Criminal prosecution. And like prison, they used to, you know, it made an attempt to rehabilitate people, and the recidivism rate was definitely lower, let's say 30 years ago. And there's a reason for that. You know, now it's all about the monetary aspect of the prison, and that alone. Well, not just that, you know, locking up as many black folks as possible.
As possible, right.
You know, but we're getting ready to wrap this joint up. Oh, and I might actually check out this Rick Ross and
Two Chainz.
Yeah.
It's gonna be closer than what people think, you know. But
Two Chainz is trash though, man.
Two Chainz is on mad hits though. Like right. you can't like, front on like, it. He's on mad hits.
You know, like he's trash, but I was gonna say like I was gonna basically say the same thing. You know, Rick Ross just makes Rick Ross so underrated as an MC, bruh. Like, dude is nice, and he picked dope-ass music.
Yeah, Ross always has great production. So that's, like, one thing he has to his advantage. Yeah. But 2 Chainz is on mad hits, though. Like, regardless of how, like, trash you may think he is, like, commercially, he has a lot of success. And, like, you got to think about, like, all those Kanye joints, all those good music joints. Like, he was on all of them. Like, they're hits, though.
Well, anyway, you got your shout outs, bro.
Yeah, man. Shout out Keys Development. Shout out 300 Gangsters. Shout out to NFAC too, man. Oh, your all praises due. Holla at us tomorrow. We got the water cooler popping. We got Billy Dane's MOP next week, yo. It's gonna be a fire show. Yo, check us out. Subscribe and share to YouTube. Follow me on IG at StrivingForPerfection_43. And catch y'all tomorrow, man. Peace.
All right, no doubt. Like I said, don't forget to check out the websites emeraldshell.com and liberationmindedmedia.com. And if you want to send us some bread, man, we'll take it. It's Jobstown, the Cash App. JobStown. It's that simple. Rest in peace, Ma. Rest in peace, Dad. And we out, fam. Peace.
Peace.
Oh, and definitely truly appreciate the Queen attorney, Natasha Harrison. Phenomenal, phenomenal conversation. Definitely look forward to having her back on the show one day. All right.
Yeah, shout out Fred, man. Shout out Fred. Yeah. Shout out Fred
for the plug. Yeah. Barbershop Conversations. Yeah, that's a dope look. My bad. Shout out to Fred.
Absolutely. Salute to Fred, man. Peace.
All right. We out.